With Ensemble Montréal in the lead, some are seeing this election as a repudiation of 8 years of Projet Montréal at City Hall. But what have those 8 years actually entailed? If you've been following the news, maybe you've heard some critiques from Ensemble leader Soraya Martinez-Ferrada, who is, if polls are to be believed, Montreal's next mayor. But what is Projet's record from those who are fighting some of the crises hitting the city? We're talking the housing and homelessness crisis. We're talking a crisis of police on our streets. What's the record from some of the people who are on the grassroots level? That is the subject of a new report, and I'm joined by one of its authors. The report evaluates the current government from a progressive perspective, and my guests, like the rest of the authors, are remaining anonymous, hoping to put the spotlight on the message rather than their individual personas. So welcome to my anonymous guest, one of the co-authors of Profit Montreal.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, let's start with the name of this new report. What does Profit Montreal sum up? You know, why does that name sum up 8 years under Projet Montréal leadership?
Right, so obviously it's a little bit of wordplay. The reason why it sums up Projet Montréal leadership, it's also tied to the reason why we call the report Class War in Montreal. Because every time Projet Montréal had an opportunity to stand up for the most vulnerable and mistreated members of our communities, they refused to do so. And instead, they decided to double down on the abuse. And they did this because they thought that it was more politically expedient to side with people who have resources, money, political influence, and therefore to side, you know, with people who can bring them profit. So that's the name.
Yeah, what do you mean by that? That you're like, oh, they're going with the most politically expedient option. This is class war. Do you have any examples? I guess the report goes through several different examples. I'd like to see you, you know, pull that apart a little bit.
Yeah. So every chapter of this report is basically an example of that. One example that is very evocative, in my opinion, is the treatment of homelessness. So Projet Montréal has pretended and continues to pretend that they're taking a compassionate approach to homelessness, that they're taking a evidence-based approach, that they're collaborating with community organizations. In reality, they've opted for an almost entirely repressive and extremely aggressive and violent approach to the treatment of unhoused people. And one example is their action toward encampments. So, you know, encampments have been extensively documented as places that are, you know, positive for unhoused people, even though they're not, you know, long-term solutions are perfect. And the dismantlement of encampments has been described as a human rights violation by the Canadian Human Rights Commission, as a death sentence by unhoused people themselves and by people that work with unhoused people. And yet Projet Montréal has continued to adopt as a policy the systematic dismantlement of encampments. So the systematic persecution and abuse of unhoused people. And the reason they've done that, of course, is because a lot of, you know, more privileged residents don't like to see encampments in their neighborhoods, right? A lot of businesses complain, a lot of homeowners complain, maybe they're worried about the property values. And, you know, instead of putting both things in a balance, saying, okay, some residents are, you know, annoyed or maybe afraid for valid reasons, but these unhoused people are suffering, they're barely surviving because of the actions of all levels of government, including the actions of the city and the actions of Montreal Police specifically. Instead of putting that on the balance and making a decision to address, you know, the survival needs of some citizens before addressing the sort of smaller desires of other citizens, they've mobilized huge state resources, not to help the people who really need help, but rather to make their suffering worse and respond to, again, the petty desires of people who already have pretty good lives. So that's an example right there.
You know, Projet Montréal has said that their hands are tied on this issue. If you look at homelessness and what levels of government are responsible for what, you know, the city has more of the public security obligations. You're saying, and for anyone who's listening, who's wondering about some of the things you're saying, what I'm hearing from you is they're putting more money into the police than they are into solving this problem, like dismantling encampments. You're funding the Boys in Blue, and you're not funding adequate resources for people who are living in these tents. What the city has said this whole time is, you know, our hands are tied, the public spaces cannot be where these people live. We need to invest in housing, but it's ultimately other levels of government that can do that. That's their rationale, and that's their argument for maintaining this policy, even after their public consultation recommended a moratorium on the practice.
Right.
And similarly, you know, the report goes through several different areas where the city has or has not done enough. And one of them being housing. Social housing is something we hear a call for a lot from grassroots organizers, from tenants in Montreal. But again, this is an area where the city says, well, the responsibility ultimately comes from the provinces and the feds. You know, what more can a local government do? What would you like to see specifically on housing and homelessness, these files where the city repeatedly has said, you know, we're doing what we can, but our hands are tied?
Yeah, so obviously there's some truth to what they're saying. Like, they are working within the constraints of provincial policy, which is horrible, federal policy, which is also horrible. So that is true. That said, they still have a lot of agency on how to manage those constraints. So to just go back quickly to the encampments issue, right? It's not just that they're funding policing and not helping people. It's that they're mobilizing public resources to, you know, make worse the insecurity of unhoused people for some perceived benefits for, you know, housed people that are not even like, you know, clearly sort of defined and measured. And again, like, they are responsible for public security, that's true, but they're responsible for the public security of every Montrealer, not just Montrealers who have houses. And the people who really suffer from insecurity in the city right now, first and foremost, are unhoused people. Right? And not just unhoused people, but also a lot of people that suffer from insecurity because of the actions of the city and specifically of the Montreal police, right? And we can think about social profiling and racial profiling. And, you know, these are, you know, major sort of like realms of practice where the Montreal police is causing huge insecurity for Montrealers. And the city is deciding to deepen that insecurity instead of improving it. So that's just like, just to reframe a bit the question. It's just, it's like the question of security. If you consider that the security of unhoused people is worth just as much as the security of, you know, housed people, then you would realize that the policies that need to be put into place in order to improve security is, one, reducing police violence, two, providing the services that the city can provide to unhoused people.
You mentioned social and racial profiling, and I know that this was something that community groups have been calling for years. They've been working behind the scenes with Poitiers leadership to get the city to, you know, do a bylaw review. There's a number of bylaws, I believe around 10, that advocates say contribute to social and racial profiling. At the beginning of this year, the city dropped that bylaw review. They said that now is not the right time, because of the crises that you're talking about, right? That it wasn't the right time to take away these tools from police, that, you know, as we've seen, it's not just in our streets, but increasingly in the metro and things like that, that it's harder for people, especially unhoused people and people in crisis, to occupy public space. You know, I've heard that from community members as, you know, a path not taken, something that the city could do that is within their power that they chose not to do. When you're looking at housing, when you're looking at homelessness, what are some of the other things that you're saying? You know, Projet Montréal, you had this in your hands. This was within your grasp. Why didn't you act as a progressive party? You said you would.
Yeah. So, I mean, an excellent example is what you just mentioned. They could have eliminated these city regulations that have been proven for 20 years to be discriminatory, to be unconstitutional, to have the only effect is to deepen the suffering of unhoused people, and they don't provide any sort of benefits for public safety. They don't solve homelessness in any way, right? So it's a purely kind of like populist, repressive, bigoted approach to the problem that doesn't help anyone. And it was in their hands to put a stop to this huge form of abuse and suffering, and they didn't do it. Same thing on racial profiling. It was in their hands to ban street checks, which is, again, something that every community group in the city, hundreds of community groups, including every expert that the city itself mandated to do research on the topic, told the city to ban street checks, which is, again, a practice that doesn't improve safety whatsoever, and yet permits huge amounts of violence against racialized communities.
And for anyone who doesn't know, a street check is
when the police stop a random person in the street for no reason whatsoever. They don't have suspicion of a crime. The person didn't do anything wrong. The police just decide to stop them. La Ligue des Droits et Libertés showed that there's no legal basis for this practice. A lot of researchers, including, again, researchers mandated by the city, have demonstrated that this practice is at the root of racial profiling, which means that the police is using this power to disproportionately and relentlessly stop people in the street, people that are racialized, and harass them, terrorize them. Often these incidents end in brutality. Sometimes they end in death. So it's like a huge campaign of terror. And, you know, experts, community organizations, everybody told the city, very simple thing to do. You have to ban street checks because street checks are totally useless for improving public safety, right? They don't reduce crime. They don't do anything good for the city. And yet they permit huge amounts of police violence. So it's the most logical thing in the world. Stop them. And that was the only recommendation that these experts gave to the city. And the city and the police chief, of course, simply refused to do it. And so they committed to perpetuating this practice, which they themselves recognize is discriminatory and is extremely harmful. So that's, again, another example, I guess, of these choices that Projet Montréal has done that are egregious.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a counterpoint. Somebody who supports the party would say, well, you know, you haven't talked about the good that Projet Montréal has done, you know, adding bike lanes. They increased the bike network by 35%, adding almost 300 kilometers. This is what we learned when we did a biking panel last week. You know, free fares for seniors on the STM. You know, small adjustments to the cityscape and street life to make things more welcoming, trying to expand from more central boroughs like the Plateau outward in the city. I think these are some measures that defenders of Projet Montréal would point to say, you know, this is what the party has done when it comes to climate and accessibility. But, you know, those other issues are important, too. We're working towards them. I want to bring us to housing, because I think this is one that's really contentious. Defenders of the party and people within the party will say that Projet Montréal has done a lot when it comes to housing. They've put in ambitious targets for social and affordable housing. They've, you know, made some bills like purpose-built affordable housing. There's projects with UTIL, which creates housing for university students. You know, there are steps that the city has taken, helping buy buildings off of the private market using their right of first refusal, giving them to community groups who are then going to try to find the funds to convert those into social or cooperative housing. You know, I want to hear from you with a sort of contested issue like that with housing. I can imagine a lot of Projet Montréal defenders. Why was it that you guys chose to highlight a different angle in your report? And on housing specifically, where do you feel that the party has failed?
Right. So, yeah, first off, to make things clear, like, we definitely don't disagree that Projet Montréal did, you know, some things that were positive, bike lanes, you know, some environmental work, and that things could have been worse with a different party, right? So we don't deny that. On housing specifically, the reality is that, you know, most people that are work on the front lines of housing are extremely angry with Projet Montréal about what they've done. This includes people that have written the report with us. This includes, you know, like most sort of tenant committees around the city. And we sort of highlight actually the first sort of three chapters of this report are about housing and about the failures of the city on housing. And of course, again, of course, the city is working within constraints of the federal government, the provincial government. Those are huge sort of constraints. Yet the city does have a lot of power and could have done a lot more than what they did. And so some examples that we give is, for example, the city could have created a rent registry that would have had, like, you know, a real rent registry, you know, controlled by the city with certification about the rents and the landlords that are putting their information in there that can be used by tenants when they fight with the Tribunal Administratif du Logement. And the city promised they would do that, and their promise was weak, and they still didn't do what they promised to do, right? So why not, right? It's something that clearly is going to help tenants. Why didn't they do it? Clearly because they thought that they would get pushback from landlords. A lot of them are their electoral base, and they decided to, again, sacrifice the people that are poorer, that are weaker, that are going to suffer the consequences of the policy, but that don't have as much power to inflict consequences, political consequences. We also talk about the fact that there's been a huge process of condoization, right, of the city, right? So, like, there's been a huge, not only construction of condos, but also transformation of rental units into condos. And this is something that, you know, neighborhoods and the city has the power to curtail. And, you know, they've put some very small policies in place, but very far from what groups asked for. There's also the question of like upzoning, right? There's been a lot of, and this is not, you know, unique to Projet Montréal, but Projet Montréal has done it, like many administrations before it, like, you know, efforts to sort of like redevelop certain parts of the city with no regard on like the effect that this would have on current tenants, especially on the poor tenants and people that are old, people that have less, you know, means to protect themselves from the abuses of landlords, right? That are extremely well documented. They could have also, you know, put in place systems, funded systems to track renovations, right? To track the permits that they're giving for renovations and understand if like they're serious, if they're just excuses to evict people. So again, they could have, you know, they could have fought, they could have used their political capital to defend the rights of tenants, right? They could have put money into defending the rights of tenants and giving more power to tenants. And they didn't really do that in any adequate way. And the consequences we're seeing them, the rent has exploded. And again, it's not only because of Projet Montréal, but they have, you know, a responsibility in it.
So why do you think that they haven't acted in the way that you'd like? Like, is this a contradiction between what they espouse and what they actually do in practice as a party? Is it part of the governing ideology behind the party? Is it just a reaction to the political trends and, you know, making decisions on the fly based on polling, based on what their opponents at Ensemble Montréal bring to the media? What do you think is behind this?
Right. So this is why, again, we talk about class war. Because Projet Montréal, you know, like any party, like any government, faced pressures from all sorts of directions, right? Anytime they make a decision, there's, you know, some business owners who want something, there's some real estate developers, there's some landlords, there's some like richer residents, homeowners that want certain things. And then on the other side, there's, you know, on-house people want something. There's, you know, like very poor tenants who want something. You know, different people want different things. You know, not everybody wants the same city, right? Not everybody has the same interests. And when they're faced with these pressures coming from different directions, they consistently decided to side with the people who had more power and resources. Why? Well, it's pretty easy to understand because those people have political influence. So they judge that, you know, if you're going to go against landlords, if you're going to go against, you know, rich homeowners, they're going to make us pay politically. Whereas if we sacrifice on house people, if we sacrifice poor people, they're not going to have the means and the capacity to make us pay. And so it's a very simple political choice that a lot of parties do, but it's extremely outrageous and kind of disgusting coming from a party that pretends to be progressive. And what's extremely outrageous is that they've consistently lied about what they're doing. And that's why most Montrealers don't realize. They think still that Projet Montréal is a progressive party that fights social injustice, that makes policies based on evidence, that, you know, fights for, you know, the poor people in the city. And that's just not true. They haven't used any of their fighting power to do that.
Well, I don't know if most Montrealers think that. If you look at the polls, you know, most Montrealers are, well, not most, but I think the largest share of people who've answered some of these polls have just said, I don't intend to vote, or I don't know who I'm voting for, I don't have enough information. So I think that's kind of the biggest share of voters that we've heard from or not heard from so far. But within the parties, within the leaders, it's Soraya Martinez-Ferrada of Ensemble Montréal who is leading the pack. And I think at the last poll I checked, Luc Leboin was about 8 points behind her. You know, that this is not a glowing endorsement from the city's population. Some people have talked about it as an issue of cars versus bikes, you know, the sort of brass tacks of city politics. But you know, I can hear some rumblings about people saying, okay, well, this report is all well and good. I don't disagree with it. But if it's not Projet, it's going to be Ensemble. You hear that from the progressive side. Is that something you thought about? And, you know, what is your response to that?
Yeah, so this is definitely something we thought about. We definitely agree with people who think that Ensemble Montréal is worse than Projet Montréal, that in fact, all of the things that we denounce in this report, Ensemble Montréal is 100% complicit with them because they've been, you know, in the opposition for 8 years. They never used their influence or their power to oppose any of these things, right? So they, every one of these egregious political choices that we denounce in the report, Ensemble Montréal was complicit, and we do believe that they would do things even worse.
Well, I don't know if you can say that they're complicit in the choices made by the governing party. That's maybe that's a bit of a stretch. Some of them they did oppose.
Well, definitely not. You know, if you talk about racial profiling, social profiling, you know, like the abandonment of tenants, these questions. But, you know, again, like this is besides the point. We do agree, you know, that Ensemble Montréal would be even worse for the city, right? Their party is not only full of like, you know, their candidates are full like of hateful, racist candidates. They are sort of a haven for landlords and real estate developers. So, yeah, we do believe that they'd be worse.
By hateful racist candidates, you mean like Thierry,
and then Leslie something as well.
Leslie Roberts, I think Thierry. We just talked about them. They were mentioned in the report that you heard. These are candidates who've made remarks that people think are diminishing, if not denying, the suffering in Gaza. Is that what you're referring
That's
to?
That's what I'm referring to, exactly. Okay. Yeah. And the leadership hasn't denounced their own candidates, right? Has supported them, which shows that there's, you know, that these ideas are at least supported or, you know, not anyways. So then the question, of course, is like, yeah, like, is if we don't want Ensemble Montréal to win, why are we criticizing Projet Montréal? Now, of course, the reason why, you know, we put out this report, even though, you know, like there is sort of this risk, is that, you know, the critiques that we're making of Projet Montréal are not new at all. Everybody to the left of Projet Montréal has been denouncing them on all these fronts that we're putting in the report for, you know, many years. What we did simply, and we didn't do much original research, what we did simply was, you know, provide a centralized account of the most egregious and violent political choices that Projet Montréal took. And we also published it at a moment where people actually care about municipal politics, where people actually follow what's happening. Because, you know, the sad reality is that, you know, a lot of voters don't spend, you know, their time. They're busy. They're working. They're not following very closely what's happening in the city. They're not following very closely the actions of the governing party. The municipal election is a moment where people pay attention. So it is a good moment to, you know, hold Projet Montréal accountable for what they did during 8 years. And, you know, the point of our report was to denounce a lot, you know, some of the decisions that Projet Montréal took, but also to demonstrate that their political strategy was wrong. They thought that they could sacrifice vulnerable people and not suffer political consequences. They thought that they could take the leftist vote for granted. And it turns out that they're wrong. And, you know, our report is like a small, very modest political consequence for what they did. They should pay a lot more. But similarly, the existence of Transition Montréal is the same thing, right? It's like
a challenge from the left,
which shows that their strategy was wrong. They thought that they would, you know, keep winning, and then they're not. So, you know, obviously they can only blame themselves.
And if people want to read this report, where do they go?
So it's simply profitmontréal.wordpress.com.
All right. And we have just a few more days to vote. Voting is November 2nd, this Sunday. So if you're reading up on the candidates, well, maybe you want to read up on this report as well. But thank you. Oh,
can I say one last thing?
Sure.
Yeah, we just also want to encourage, you know, everybody reading this report and listening, you know, to be involved politically, you know, during the 4 years. Like, this report is not so much about the election. It's about asking people to, you know, put pressure on the government year round, not just during the election, because it's the only way that we're going to get them to actually respect our rights and do what's good for the city.
All right. A strong message from one of the anonymous authors of Profit Montréal. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.